Okay, so this week's parsha, chapter 9, begins the story of again the Korban Pesach. So the Korban Pesach throughout the years in the desert, according to Rashi and many others, was only offered one time. 40 years in the desert, only offered one time. This time in this week's parsha, where Hashem says, "Bring the Korban Pesach," the Jews offer the Korban Pesach, except for a couple of them, which starts the process of what's called the Korban Pesach Sheni, all in this week's parsha. This is again about 11 and a half months after the Jews left Egypt. Before they left Egypt, Korban Pesach was so valuable, it was the mechanism to get out of Egypt. They brought a Korban Pesach. 11 months later, God says, do it again. A couple of people got left out and does the Pesach Sheni a month later, which we're not doing Pesach Sheni today.
It could have been
Contaminated, contaminated, right. And they were like, listen, this is so important that a year ago that was the only way out, and we did something good. We helped you out in being contaminated. We took out some dead bodies. We can't be losing that. And that was the story in the Chumash. Oh, so now the first question is, which is what we spoke about. No, we didn't speak about that. Was why would the Jews have yes bought it 1 year and have not bought it the other 39 years? Like, what is that? Either there's an obligation to bring it in the desert and that would be applicable all 40 years, or it would not be, for whatever reason, in the second. Applicable during the 40 years, and therefore they wouldn't have bought it any of the 40 years. How do you have yes one, no for 39? And again, in order to answer that question, you have to know what is the default position. Is the default position yes, and the question's on the 39 years they didn't do it, or is the default position no, and the question is why they did it the first year? And this is a serious question because the Talmud doesn't anywhere discuss this question. The Talmud has side factors in this question that then the Rishonim 11, 1200s, bring it. Oh, now we'll discuss if the default yes or no. That's how it works. That's the understanding of how it works out. Default yes or no. Now, the Tosfos and Rashi seems to say that they, again, there's also debate if they brought it the 40 years, but we're assuming not, that the reason why they were not supposed to bring it, the reason why they did bring it this first year, this week's Parsha, special dispensation. In Hebrew, we call it Hayrosha, special dispensation that God said, year one, you could do it. Other 39 years, you can't do it. And that's an easy way out of it, by the way. It means really you shouldn't do it for the 40 years. Year one's a dispensation. Why not for the 40 years then? Obvious question, why not for the 40 years? So the most accepted approach is very simple. We had a rule which we have discussed. When it comes to the Pesach sacrifice, there is an anomaly on the law. That means most of the time, there are certain rules, what's permitted and what's prohibited. When it comes to the Pesach sacrifice, an exception to the rule, if a person's child and or slave is uncircumcised, the adult owner, parent, cannot offer a Korban Pesach. It's the only mitzvah on the Torah there. If your kid is not circumcised, you have to eat matzah, have to eat maror, you have to get sit in a sukkah, bring a shake a lulav. Every obligation is applicable. You also have to circumcise your son. But if he's not circumcised, we'll deal with the circumcision as a standalone issue, except for the Korban Pesach. When it comes to the Korban Pesach, you cannot offer the Korban Pesach when your child or slave is uncircumcised. And then, that's just a fact. That's a biblical commandment. If you do, it's one of the 613 commandments, a big prohibition. You are not to do it. Now, the Talmud discusses, is that they all tie it in, openly, did the Jews circumcise in the desert? And the Talmud comes out saying they did not circumcise in the desert because, very simple, it's a dangerous procedure, certainly then, even today. A dangerous procedure. And when you're traveling in the desert, or anywhere, by the way, when you're traveling, you don't perform dangerous surgeries. So what happened was the children were born that first year, and or the slaves that they were acquiring, whatever that exactly means, and therefore they were not allowed in biblical law to bring a Korban Pesach. And God gave them one exception. The first year there was an exception. God said, okay, the first year, even though the slaves who joined you leaving Egypt, even though some of you might have had a son in those first 11 and a half months, and therefore you would be prohibited, we're giving you a leniency the first year, but after that you're traveling, stay away from the Korban Pesach. So the default position according to this approach is no sacrificial Pesach, Korban Pesach throughout the 40 years, special dispensation for year one. So yes, so the obligation we discussed in the past, in the Mechaseret days, is like this. Everyone has to be circumcised day eight and forward, if not done day. The father is obligated to circumcise the 8-day-old child because a child, we're not trusting a child with a knife at 8-day-old. No chance. And there's a question, is it the father obligated on the son, or the son's obligated and the father just gets it because he's the physical? That's real in-depth law. But the reality is, at day eight, the child has to be circumcised. And if the father does not circumcise the child, he is in a violation of a biblical commandment. And sometimes the courts will step in and do it themselves. And then at 13 years old, the kid becomes obligated himself. He's no longer a child. If the child doesn't do it, the ultimate punishment, karas, K-A-R-E-S, 36 violations that get karas. If the father does not circumcise his son, he is not punished with karas. He violates a positive command. It's as if he didn't put on tefillin. It's as if he didn't shake a lulav. The child himself, who now is not a child, at 13, he now becomes obligated, punishable, and the highest punishment. So once a child is 13, what we did discuss years ago, karas, K-A-R-E-S, which Ramban discusses, the word karas in English is translated as cut off. The simplest interpretation means God cuts the soul off from the Jewish nation. The ultimate punishment. Now the Rambam seems to say even that punishment there's repentance for, and even in the next world they will way to be attached, but it's the ultimate, like you're no longer a Jew. And it's 36 of them. But it doesn't mean identifying as a Jew in this world while you walk around wearing a cap. It means in God's world, you're out. And there are big ones. The big ones are sleeping with your mother. It's 36 major ones, right? So, and these are what's called karas, and that word v'nichrasa appears many times in the Torah. Someone violates this, v'nichrasa, the person is cut off. So the child on himself, a classic minchas kenach, one of the classic minchas kenach, probably spoke about by many circumcisions by fathers, is at 13 years old, does the father's obligation stop, or it's also there and the child is added on to the obligation? The father is definitely obligated from day 8 to 13, and the kid is definitely obligated from 13 on. What about the father at 13 and on? And the minchas kenach has many practical differences. The easiest practical difference is going to be who pays.
Yeah.
Could the child turn to the father and say, I'm 13, I'll do it, but you pay because you're also obligated? That would be the easiest obligation. The easiest difference. But there are other differences as well, which I think we might have discussed in other classes years ago. I'm not really sure.
Or is the father still obligated if the child at 13 refuses?
Well, he loses his power, but he'd still be obligated. But you're on the right path on one of the approaches. That means at 13, there's a question if the father's obligated. If he is obligated, now the difference is going to be, back to square one, this is going to be the major difference, is from a child at 8 days old, now we're circling back, I'm very impressed with myself, I might add it in, from 8 days old until 13 years old, if the child is uncircumcised, the father violates, as if he didn't put on his willing, the father violates, he didn't shake his little, it's a minor obligation, but you know what he is in trouble for? He can't offer the current pace, because he has a child that's uncircumcised. The question becomes, if a father is obligated at 13, when the kid becomes 13, if he's still obligated, then it could be he can't bring the Pesach sacrifice, even when the kid's adult. So let's say the father does repentance at 13 years old, kid 13, and the father says, you know what, I didn't know this rule. I want my kid to do circumcise. And the kid says, you don't control my body, my rules. The father might lose out the ability to do a current Pesach if he's still obligated. That's a great debate mentioned by the Mechas Kodesh. The Mechatzkanach and the laws of circumcision and the laws of Karban Pesach, he repeats himself sometimes, wonders what is the situation when a child becomes 13 and is the father obligated? That's the point of how it circles back. So the child, if the father is obligated to circumcise the son, potentially he'd be losing out to bring the sacrifice. In the desert, since no one was circumcised, health reasons, correctly so, by the way, health reasons, and it becomes a debate. It doesn't matter why your kid's not circumcised, potentially. As long as the kid is not circumcised, you can't bring a carbon Pesach. And the Mishnah is going to ask, since we're going this over memory right now, the Mishnah is going to say, wait a second. What about a case where a kid is proven, in the old days, to be a hemophiliac, which would mean the father had two sons, gave the circumcision correctly so, kids did not survive it based on the hemophiliac, doesn't use that word, but that's what it means. And then the third son is supposed to be, he's born, we tell the guy, Not only we tell the father, don't do it, we not your choice. You cannot do it. It's don't do it. We tell you openly, the courts will tell the father, this kid is not to be circumcised. But it could be the father still can't bring the sacrifice because the Pesach sacrifice might not be dependent on the desire of the father, like when the child is 13 plus. It might be dependent on if the child is circumcised. And if the child is not circumcised, possibly for whatever reason it's going to be, the father's out of the Korban Pesach game, which now we're saying in the desert, by the way, tie it into the desert, since we're doing it all full circle, in the desert, were they supposed to be circumcised? No, because they were traveling. So if they would have gone to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, listen, I want to circumcise my kid, good chance Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, no. Not, it's your choice. We are not circumcising while we're traveling in the desert. Do not do it. And God tells them, that's a good move, Moshe Rabbeinu. Right call, right ruling. Do not circumcise. But by the way, for the next 39 years, do not offer the Korban Pesach. So far, yes.
The thing about not traveling the desert, I have a real problem with, because there's
Not traveling, not being circumcised, or not bringing Korban Pesach.
not being circumcised in the desert because of the
Oh.
danger of travel, because they were literally circumcised the night of the Exodus.
Excellent question.
And so that's literally they're about to travel. To where? They don't know, but they're getting out, and God doesn't say go out a mile and stop. God's like, start walking. So that right there
Yes.
defeats that whole argument because they already have a precedent for marching. When they got circumcised. And the second thing is,
Excellent. Okay, excellent.
when Miriam passes away, the camp stayed in place for 7 days.
Yeah, but
They
that
talked.
doesn't mean they knew about that. I don't
But
know.
how would
Did
they
they know they'd be there
choose?
7 days?
How would they choose to stay in place? God is the one who says walk or not walk. Because if they choose to stay in place, then everybody circumcised left stay in place for 3 days.
Two very good questions. So the first one is we have to think about it offhand. I know I wrote about it once. I still have to
Would
remember.
you
And the second one,
suggest?
we discussed years ago, pre-videos, we discussed years ago about whether, what does it mean? It says the Jews stuck around because of Miriam, right? Which is also this expression.
Yeah.
Miriam did a sin. God said,
Oh,
you'll
7 days, like spinner, like,
stay
yeah.
around. And it says the Jews didn't travel for 7 days.
Yeah.
And we spoke about it then. Tzaras is equal to death.
Okay.
So your words were correct. So we spoke about years ago that, wait a second. If the clouds didn't move, because the Jews in the desert only traveled based on the clouds moving and the shofar blowing, so they never made a move
Yeah.
right or left, north or south, until the shofar sounded and the clouds started moving. So we asked them many years ago. We asked them, wait a second, if the clouds didn't move, so of course the Jews didn't move. Why are you saying the Jews are so good they stuck around for Miriam? Why would they stick around for Miriam? The clouds stayed. There were many days over the course of 40 years. Probably, if you do the statistics, there's a Rashi about it. It's like 85% of the days that the Jews were not traveling. They never knew, so psychologically, it was very tough for them. That was the beauty of what they did. That means they never unpacked the suitcase. Right? They never hung stuff into the closet because it's always could be tomorrow morning. We're out of here. It was always a one day event. The money will show up tomorrow. But the reality was that God was easy on them, beginning of Parshas Maaseh Rashi, that He didn't make them travel so much. But if Maaseh Parshas, but if. They never moved without the clouds, so we spoke about them. Then what did they do so impressive? And on the other hand, if the clouds moved, then they stayed behind. That sounds like a massive event, and that doesn't even sound like a compliment to the Jews. Is it a compliment to the Jews that the clouds started moving? We said no. The obligation was to go with the
God
clouds.
said, move with the
So
cloud.
that was a class we gave a
So,
long time ago. I have to look at all my notes back then. What were you about to say?
they said, in leaving Egypt,
The two good ones,
in
Charles.
leaving Egypt, there were so many miracles that occurred. The additional miracle that the baby got circumcised. Adults, not babies. Adults.
Oh, yeah.
It was adults.
Oh, so you want to say, Stephen's saying, good, that the leaving of Egypt itself, that when they're still in Egypt, that first circumcision were allowed, we were commanded to do, but that was special protection.
Special protection.
And a special God command. Means
Yeah.
God said to them, you want to leave, you got to do a circumcision.
Okay.
So, and post that, entering in the desert, they were doing it because of an obligation. Not because God said, I mean, of course God said do every mitzvah, but God didn't say specifically, by the way, do it. So that's very good. Two good questions, one good answer. No Pesach at all. Pesach Sheni is, if the guys miss it, they bring the second.
There was no case that offered at all.
Not first, not second, during the 39 years, except for this week's parsha, that first year of the desert, according to Rashi.
It's not a question about Pesach Sheni because there was no Oh,
Pesach.
it's because I Pesach
No,
Pesach.
that's right.
Not Pesach
But
Sheni. We're not talking about that ball.
this week's parsha is the exception that most of the Jews, minus two, let's say, brought the Pesach Rishon, and then these two Jews said, what's going to be with us? So then God made a commandment, bring the Pesach Sheni. After that, no one brought, for all 39 years, according to the most simplistic interpretation. According to Rashi, simple
So
interpretation.
therefore, it's not a question why they didn't do Pesach Sheni because. Because there was no Pesach.
Correct. Right. Our question was, why didn't they do Pesach 39 years? So our answer is going to be they were not obligated in the Pesach. Well, they couldn't bring it. I'm not obligated. I'm the right word is. They couldn't bring the Pesach because they had children that were uncircumcised. Whether the children were allowed to be uncircumcised doesn't make a difference. The uncircumcised child and or slave, it creates the situation where now that they're not allowed to bring the current Pesach.
Except
but there was zero current Pesach, not one, not two, for 39 years, according to the approach we're taking now.
Not every family had somebody.
That's what I'm saying. What about people that are children? Why couldn't they do it?
We didn't have children.
Correct. So the easy answer, you guys are opening Pandora's box.
Zaflod
had to be five girls. So the easy approach, and that is, so far upstairs here, everyone's thinking clearly, Michael. The easy answer for that is going to be that they had slaves. Because that's what I keep on saying. It's a child or a slave. Open pasuk in the Torah.
Was the mixed multitude considered slaves?
Possibly.
Oh, okay.
Possibly. And they definitely had slaves. Let's put this in. The two statements are true. Almost for sure there were slaves in the Midbar. And there was the, what do you call them?
The multi-Arab.
Arab Rav.
Every family had a slave.
But you could easily explain that the ones who had the girls had the slaves. Because how many families do you think only had girls? Salafat seems to be, not for sure, but seems to be the only ones who stepped forward without any boys. So you could say that there were other families and just the girls didn't step up to the plate. I don't know. No, more likely that based on the world at that time, God's miracle act this way, whatever it was, that in the desert, when people were giving birth, every family had a boy.
Like,
now, did every have a family have a boy that first year? That's also a little tough. But maybe.
Just like they had 7, 8 kids at a time in Egypt. Maybe that were 6 at a time.
And
maybe they had
very
a
good. And to add another quirk, since we're going much deeper, I'm just touching on topics here, since you guys are bringing it up. There is a question. Is if most of the congregation cannot offer the sacrifice of the Pesach, are the minority allowed? We had a chart a couple of years ago that you actually put on the website.
That's right.
Right, remember we had that? I remember Charles put up a chart.
I don't know the answer, but
it's not so simple. So it could be, again, just on the spot, it could be that, yes, a minor percentage. Now, I'm saying extreme minor is only B'nai Salafa, but now I don't have to do only B'nai Salafa. We could say 20% of the population will only have girls and no slaves, and therefore they should have been permitted to offer the Korban Pesach because nobody was uncircumcised under their control, but a minor amount of people don't offer a Korban Pesach when the majority cannot.
Or even when there's a large minority that cannot.
Very
possibly.
Yes.
It just, you undermine the unity of...
So for the 49, for the 39 years... In the desert, minus that first year. And if you remember from Joshua, they entered Eretz Yisrael right before another Pesach sacrifice.
They
entered a Nisan.
Yes.
So it was that last year, but all those years before, no sacrifice. Oh, another good question.
The only celebration
it seems another conversation we've had, checkerahubna.com, maybe I'll give you the exact dates. But we had another conversation because, as I said before, it's Gemara. The Gemara says that in order the disqualification of bringing a Korban Pesach for a child or slave uncircumcised is limited to the Korban Pesach. But it is not limited to Matzah Mara. They are still obligated in Matzah Mara. And we just have to step one to know, which would mean on the simple interpretation, for 39 years, if the reason they didn't bring the Korban Pesach was because they had children, slaves uncircumcised, they would still be obligated in Matzah Mara. But besides that, we had the conversation that the early commentators discussed on Rabbah.com, was the mon eligible for Matzah? We had a share like that, right? Was the mon, now mon is what? The special spiritual food that a person says, I have in mind, it should taste like
matzah.
Anything, but matzah included.
Like matzah.
Well, no, the question was, but that wasn't the question. The question was, during the 40 years in the desert, could they have used the mon for matzah and fulfill the mitzvah? Or do you need growth from the ground species in order to be considered matzah to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah? Just because it looks and tastes like matzah and quacks like matzah doesn't mean it is matzah for the mitzvah. Correct.
So,
and nowadays, we have a biblical obligation to eat matzah without the ability to have a Korban Pesach.
So
it's not a problem to say.
Still us. We're still obligated in Korban Pesach.
That's what I'm saying.
It
yes. But it, yes, was, I don't know if it's called obligated. Fine. But we don't, my point is they're not interconnected. Correct. If some, we are today biblically obligated to eat matzah, whether or not we bring a Korban Pesach. We have not to bring a Korban Pesach, which would mean the same thing Stephen was saying in the desert. They did not bring the Korban Pesach for 39 years because of what we discussed about circumcision, but they certainly were still obligated to matzah like we are today. That's what I'm saying. Because you asked, did they observe it? The answer would be, why would they in the desert be any different than us today? Now, as a side thing, also Rabbi, we did discuss that when you eat the Korban Pesach, in order to successfully fulfill the mitzvah, you must eat matzah with the Korban Pesach. That's a separate obligation. It says with the Korban Pesach, you're supposed to eat matzah and maror. But that doesn't mean if there's no Korban Pesach, you're not supposed to eat matzah and maror. So with the Korban Pesach, you have to eat matzah and maror. But they didn't bring a Korban Pesach, but they still have a matzah. So if someone brings the Korban Pesach without matzah, it's a question of if he actually fulfilled it in the correct way. As a side thing, a lot of side things tonight. The Korban Pesach has two obligations. There's an obligation to slaughter the Korban Pesach and an obligation to eat the Korban Pesach. Most sacrifices only have one obligation. Offer, sacrifice. Korban Pesach is an exception to the rule. Offer is one, eat is two. The eating requires the matzah. So if someone now slaughtered the Korban Pesach and eats it without matzah, he would still fulfill mitzvah A, not mitzvah B. But if he doesn't bring a Korban Pesach at all, like today, you still have an obligation of matzah. Biblically, that means when we count to 613, this one of them is called the asham. I don't know if there's an English word for that. Was there a word for asham in English? I don't even know. The asham, the guilt, sin offering.
Guilt offering.
Guilt offering. Sin offering. Voluntary, all burnt offering. That's a mitzvah. But within that mitzvah, there's not a secondary 613 of eat of it. Well, burnt offering doesn't get eaten. But the chatas would not necessarily have a second one, offer the sin offering and have the Kohen or yourself eat from the sin offering. That doesn't count as a 613. You are correct that within the process of the mitzvah, there would be an obligation to eat it. That's under the process. So for example, it's the easiest one we said a couple weeks ago. When it says slaughter the Korban Pesach, the slaughtering of the Korban Pesach has four steps. It's slaughter, capture the blood in the cup, walk the blood to an altar, and sprinkle it on the altar. There's four obligatory steps that are required, but it's not four mitzvahs in the 613. So when we're saying, is it a mitzvah, Stephen, you are 100% right. There is a mitzvah within eating of these sacrifices. Correct. We're talking about the 613. When it comes to the 613, they are not listed except for the Korban Pesach, which has both an offering, slaughter it, and an offering, eat it. The eating it includes matzah maror. There's another one of eat matzah itself. Now, usually, you'll fulfill the eating matzah by itself with the Korban Pesach. So when you're eating in an ideal time, the Beis Hamikdash should be here soon, or in the past when the Beis Hamikdash was around, the person would slaughter this Korban Pesach. One person slaughters for everybody. We all get credit. That's one mitzvah we all fulfill. Then they would eat the Korban Pesach together with matzah maror, fulfill the eating Pesach, and also simultaneously fulfill the eating matzah, which we do many times. Many times we do one thing and we get credit for two. Not a big deal. If the guy, and that would be potentially why some want to eat more matzah, two at the Seder. Some want to say, eat two kazesim. Why? One representing the Korban Pesach, one representing the second mitzvah. Because there are two mitzvahs of matzah. Today's world, we only have the ability to fulfill one. Because we don't offer a Pesach sacrifice. In the Pesach sacrifice time, we have now. As a side thing to know, since we're way off base on so many levels today, we might as well continue with it. When you offer the Pesach sacrifice, the biblical obligation, as I said before, is to eat it with matzah and maror. Both. Maror in those days is biblical. Today, we only have a biblical obligation to eat matzah. Maror is rabbinic today. That means maror is only biblical when attached to a Korban Pesach. Matzah has a separate obligation today. And that's a massive difference because when you go to your local rabbi, I'm not feeling well, I don't want to eat this. Any questions you have, when it comes to matzah, they have to rule stringently because matzah is a biblical obligation today, independent of the Korban Pesach. But maror today is only rabbinic because it is not offered with the Korban Pesach. With the Korban Pesach, it becomes biblical. But nowadays, eating maror is rabbinic, and therefore there are leniencies that you're allowed to use because it's only rabbinic mitzvah nowadays. Nowadays, matzah biblical, maror rabbinic. In the old days, Korban Pesach biblical offering, Korban Pesach biblical eating, including that eating is with biblically matzah and maror. That is the setup. During the desert, on the simplistic interpretation, for 39 years they didn't offer a carbon pesach. They would have been obligated in matzah, biblically. Maror, probably not biblically. And what else do I want to say about this? I'm not sure. Circumcision, something carbon pesach those days. And the question was, how did they fulfill the matzah? Did they actually go Ibn Ezra? Ibn Ezra says they used to send someone out, not like in the old days, send someone out of the camp, go to the local non-Jewish place that was planting, and get grain to bring back into the camp to bake your matzahs. As opposed to potentially someone to say, no, just think through the matzah. Because maybe you could say, not everyone says, that if it looks like matzah, tastes like matzah, quacks like matzah, makes indigestion like matzah, then you could be able to fulfill your mitzvah with matzah with the mon as well. That's a debate. Ibn Ezra, not discussing the debate, just says, by the way, how did they get matzah? They bought grain from non-Jewish people while they were traveling to the desert. And then Ibn Ezra says what Stephen's about to say. That makes sense, year one, year two, when they were local to the non-Jewish areas. But at a certain point, they were in the middle of the desert. Who said they were able to find people who were selling? Ibn Ezra himself asked that question. But you were thinking, all right?
No, I disagree on that. When you had that many Jews with that much gold, believe me, the Arab traders would come and bring whatever they might have needed.
And it says,
wherever they
Ibn Ezra says, Ibn Ezra actually, I think, if I remember, it's him or someone says it about him, actually adds in the words that the merchants, he said, I think he said Yishmael in purple because they lived there, Arab merchants were making business. Now, in general, just to note, in general, the Jews in the desert didn't need food because they had the money that sustained them.
But they wouldn't have been shy of telling them when they came before.
Oh, exactly. Come back in a month, we're going to make you very wealthy.
With grain.
With
grain, so we can make it.
We'll make you wealthy. Right. In fact, we spoke then that the reason why in the Baal Pa'ar, the idolatrous Baal Pa'ar, it says what? That the women brought the men in, and they said, here, our good stuff here. It says they ate, and then they violated the Baal Pa'ar. So we asked the question 20 years ago. It's in chain of thought. That's how long ago it is. But we spoke about it before, but in chain of thought.
Right.
The idolatrous concept of what's called Baal Pa'ar, P-E-O-R. Now, the rabbis say
It's an idol worship.
And the rabbi said, how do you violate Baal Pa'ar? What type of service is done in Baal Pa'ar? The Medrash and Gemara says that Baal Pa'ar was defecating. That was the type of idolatry it was, defecating. So some of the commentators say, 300 years ago, you know why the Jews had to eat? And the non-Jewish women gave them the food and said, eat before you serve the idol?
Because
when you ate...
you could defecate when you had the stuff that does...
Because when you ate the man, you didn't go to the bathroom. It was spiritual food. So therefore, that's why the Torah has to say they ate and drank and they served Baal Pa'ar. No extra words in the Torah. They ate and drank is the only way to serve Baal Pa'ar by eating and drinking.
That is maybe, except that they ate quail for the whole time too. They eat quail all the time. That quail never stopped falling.
Not so clear.
Slav birds, they said, ate them all the time. Slav
not
birds.
So clear, but okay. Okay. I hear it, but not so clear. So either way, we have
good
that.
Point.
Yes. Yes. The higher the camera, the higher the brain cells. On everybody. We're not starting up, Michael. We're not starting because he's following. Only 3 minutes left. Okay. So let's do a recap. This was nothing that I prepared for tonight, just for the record. But it was still, I think, a good conversation.
No.
Yeah, this is all, yeah. But the point, the only I thought it was the first thing, that was the thing I did prepare. Starting out that this week's parasha discusses the Karban Pesach, Rishon, and the two people who needed a Sheni. Rashi on this page right away says, this is the only time during the 39 years that the Jews offered the Karban Pesach, Rishon or Sheni, obviously. Only time during the 39 years. Rashi here does not discuss why they wouldn't have, and why here, yes. The obvious question for us became, that's a discrepancy that's huge. Why yes, as opposed to yes all the years, or why no, and why yes this year? The seeming answer is, easiest approach, is that this was a special dispensation that God said year one, it's really year two, because they passed another Nisan, so it's year two in their calendar year, but it's their first opportunity for a Pesach, because the first Pesach, they were still in Egypt, and hadn't hit the desert yet. But the year after they left Egypt, that was the one time, according to Rashi, that they might have. Just to end on a quiz, as a note, just to confuse everybody even more, Rashi in Bezos HaBrocha seems to imply that during the desert years that some people offered a Karban Pesach. But again, that's a whole rabbit hole we're not getting into.
Is it possible that by Matan Torah they got healed, so everybody did have children then, with no people without children?
I'm saying there were no people without children, possibly, since everybody was healed, nobody was infertile.
No, but, oh.
So that was after the first year.
Oh, right.
Also, there were people that would be 85, 90-year-olds that left Egypt that...
weren't getting married.
Yeah, they weren't, I mean...
Weren't having kids.
I mean, yeah, weren't having kids, right.
All right.
Right. Okay, good job. Good job up here.